Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wealthy Sisters Radio, the show that promotes positive people. Tune in live on Mondays at 12 noon Eastern, or listen live and 24/7 at www.wealthysistersradio.com. We know you will be inspired, empowered, and informed by the incredible women featured. And now it's showtime. Ladies and gentlemen, our host, entrepreneur, author, speaker, Deborah Hartnett.
Well, hello, 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 and welcome to Wealthy Sisters Radio, sponsored by Wealthy Sisters Media Group. You can visit us for all your branding and publishing needs at www.wealthysisters, that's S-I-S-T-A-S, media.com. Wealthy Sisters Radio is where we proudly promote positive people, and our purpose is twofold. First, we love to provide you, the dynamic listener, with inspiration and encouragement and that practical knowledge that you can apply right now to your business and life and have that positive impact. And second, we must provide that platform to edify, promote, acknowledge, and say thank you to the sisters for doing big things. I'm Deborah Hartnett, your host, broadcasting live on the Worldwide Blog Talk Network, and today is another awesome Monday, July 8, 2013, and guess what? It's our anniversary. Yes, we celebrate 4 years today. We're so excited, and we owe it all to you. Thank you so much for tuning in each year, every week. We appreciate you for sharing the space with us. And that's right, this is all of our banner year. We have agreed to that. We're standing for it, and it is coming to pass. And you know, we are here every week at the same time. That's 12 noon Eastern. So we thank you so much for spreading the word. Well, of course, this being our special 4th year anniversary, you know we have the show for you today. If you are listening live or via the download, you want to make sure you give this show your undivided attention. Or if you can't make sure, go back and listen. You don't want to miss this show at all. I have a guest today that I'm thrilled to introduce to the Wealthy Sisters community. You know that expression that is used, don't talk about it, be about it. Well, that's what our guest is doing. She's a highly successful businesswoman and a track record of fortune, and she is paying it forward with her global mission of helping 1 million entrepreneurs reach that 1 million in revenue plus. Now, she is none other than our special guest, Ms. Shramana Mitra, and she is the founder, as I said, of 1 Million by 1 Million, a global virtual incubator that aims to help 1 million entrepreneurs globally to reach $1 million in revenue and beyond. She is a Silicon Valley entrepreneur and a strategy consultant. She writes the blog Shramana Mitra on Strategy and is the author of Entrepreneur's Journeys book series. And she was a columnist for Forbes, and as a CEO entrepreneur, she ran 3 companies, that's DAIS, Intrica, and Umma. Shramana has a master's degree in electrical engineering and computer science from MIT. So we are so excited to have her on the show today, our anniversary, 4 years today. So you know what you've got to do right now. You got to call everybody, test book them, Facebook them, tweet them, let them know to dial Wealthy Sisters Radio right now, 347-838-9278, 347-838-9278. We want to hear your shout outs. If this show has helped you over the past 4 years, call us today and let us know, and we appreciate you for doing that. And also, we want to remind you to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can find us at Wealthy Sisters, and also, you can download this show and all of our other great shows at Wealthy Sisters Radio, and we're free on iTunes as well. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with our dynamic guest. This topic today, I'm telling you, you are going to be so excited to hear this, so make sure you get your pens and your paper ready for our special guest today, who is on a mission to help 1 million reach 1 million. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short commercial break.
Three women are murdered every day. Around the world, at least one in three women has been or will be abused in her lifetime. It's time to change these statistics. Join Saving Promise, a national grassroots movement that's bringing about real change. Visit www.savingpromise.org to join our One Voice campaign and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Text My Promise to 20222 to make a $5 donation. We need your voice. Together we can live, thrive, and be free of domestic violence.
Does your home or office decor need a resurrection? Is there a special room of yours that says blah, blah, blah and is lacking inspiration? Then you need creative ways and solutions. We help you create feel-good spaces that are functional and beautiful at the same time. We are here to cater to you with an environmental and spiritually conscious flair. Both in-person and virtual interior design services are available. Visit us online at creativeways.com, spelled with a K, or call 888-280-8318 for a complimentary consultation. We create spaces that inspire you.
Well, hello, we are live back on Wealthy Sisters Radio, our fourth year anniversary. We owe it all to you. Thank you so much for being the best audience. We appreciate all of your greetings, text messages, the tweets, the Facebook messages, the emails over the years. Thank you so much for sharing this space with us. And we are grateful that this show has been able to have an impact on your life. So thank you again for helping us celebrate our fourth year anniversary. And we are not going to hold our guest from you any longer. She is a dynamic individual. I'm thrilled to have her on the show. Shramana, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, so happy to have you on Wealthy Sisters Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, indeed. And we know that you are awake kind of early there. You're on the West Coast, and so we appreciate you joining us at this hour.
My pleasure. It's 9:07 a.m.
So that's probably late for you, a woman of your stature, all that you do every day.
Yes, it's not very early.
Are you a morning person?
Well, you know, because we work with so many time zones, we kind of adjust to whatever is needed. You know, we are a global virtual incubator. 1 million by 1 million is the only global virtual incubator in the world at this point. And we really have entrepreneurs all over the world, and we have partners all over the world. You know, our team is a global team, so we have to operate on a global time zone basis.
Definitely so. Well, you know, here at Wealthy Sisters, we always say that we are a little bit nosy here. Our audience loves to be able to feel like they can relate and kind of get to know you. So if you don't mind, just share with us a little bit how you got started, where you grew up, and then we'll move forward into this great project that you have.
Sure. I grew up in Calcutta, India, in the 70s and the 80s, and in 1989 I came to the United States for college. I did all my college in Massachusetts, so I did Smith College for undergraduate and then MIT for graduate school, and I started my first company while still a graduate student at MIT. So I started very early. My first job out of school, or even not even yet out of school, was a CEO job, which was of my own company. And then
wow.
All through the 90s, I did three startups as founder CEO. Then I spent the 2000 decade with a lot of consulting. I consulted up and down the technology value chain, all the way from chips and semiconductors, EDA, to consumer internet, enterprise software, and everything in between. And I also, during that time, got to work with a lot of very large companies, you know, Fortune 500, Global 2000 companies, as well as a lot of venture-funded companies, small startups, and so forth. It was a very broad immersion in the technology universe. And while I was doing that, I also started writing my blog, which you have mentioned in your introductions, Shramana Mitra on Strategy. And that was about 2005. You know, blogs were not as well known at that time, so we were kind of early in the blogging process. And, you know, one thing led to another. In 2008, I got invited to write a column for Forbes. I did that for 3 years and stopped that in about 2010, although I still write a lot of syndicated columns in various places. Right now, Harvard Business Review is publishing a series from me. So the writing became a big part of the later part of the 2000 decade. I wrote 5 books on entrepreneurship in the 2008-2010 time frame. And
wow.
2010 beginning is when I thought that I was going to package all this work up and bring together this initiative called 1 Million by 1 Million, which is the only global virtual incubator in the world. And we launched 1M1M at the end of 2010.
The end of 2010. So, Bayou, want to go back a little bit just to kind of talk a little bit about your mindset, because we always talk about that here on Wealthy Sisters Radio, and we realize that an entrepreneur has to have a certain mindset. And it's very interesting. You went to school, and you said before you finished your graduate studies, you started your own business. Was it your intent growing up to have your own business, or did you ever think?
I have an entrepreneur's daughter, and I knew since I was 16 years old that I was going to be an entrepreneur. So I was pretty much looking for the quickest path to that goal.
That's great. So you never had in your mind, you know, here in America, we're trained to, it's not on what business you're going to run, but it's who are you going to work for. So you never had in your mind that you wanted to work for someone, except you knew you want to work for yourself.
Yes, I did not really want to work for anybody.
That's great. So now you talked a little bit about your path here as to how you actually came about and started with the 1 million by 1 million. Can you give us a little bit more about the inspiration, what really made you want to do this?
Well, you know, I am a computer scientist by background. I've had a lot of training in the area of scalable system design. So I was in a parallel computing project starting 1993 at MIT. And even before that, my bachelor's work was also in the area of parallel and distributed computing. So it's a mindset of designing systems that can scale that was very ingrained in me through my computer science training. That was one influence. And the other is that, you know, because I grew up in Calcutta, which is, I don't know how much you know about it, Calcutta is a rather poor city. I don't come from a poor family or that kind of a background, but if you're growing up in a place like Calcutta, you see poverty all around, and you see these huge populations that are trying to develop. And the India that I grew up in was not a developed India. Today's India is a much higher opportunity India.
Mm-hmm.
My India, the way I knew India, was a much lower opportunity, much more stagnant India. So development economics was of deep interest to me, and I studied economics as my second major for my undergraduate. And subsequently, I've studied a lot of things. I've studied Muhammad Yunus's work in the Grameen Bank microfinance area and a whole lot of other things. And so there were two major threads. One is the scalable system design. The other is development economics. These were two threads that were very ingrained into my system. And then the third thing was entrepreneurship. I am an entrepreneur. I've always believed in entrepreneurship being the solution to the world's problems, and an entrepreneurship being the most effective method of development economics. So I basically put all of those thought processes together, and I wanted to build a scalable, you know, entrepreneurial venture that is going to be in the realm of entrepreneurship development, entrepreneurship education, entrepreneurship incubation kind of area. And I knew that by doing it on a virtual basis, by designing a system that is designed to scale on a on the internet and so forth. That those are the ways of designing a scalable system. So that, you know, given that our mission is to help 1 million entrepreneurs reach $1 million and beyond in annual revenue, my way of doing that was using my background in scalable system design and in entrepreneurship and in development economics. So that's the kind of thought process behind what has come together as the 1 million by 1 million global virtual incubator.
Yeah, that's I can definitely see the transition and everything coming together for you to do that with your background. Tell me, what made you want to reach a goal of 1 million entrepreneurs? Where did that number come from?
Well, it's a, you know, it could have been 10,000, it could have been 100,000, it could have been 1 million. I don't know. It just came from, you know, a good, solid, round number that is large enough that would have a big impact. If you read the 1 million mission, it is 1 million entrepreneurs reaching $1 million and beyond in annual revenue, helping create 10 million jobs and $1 trillion in global GDP. That's the full mission of 1 million by 1 million. So, you know, this is a very large goal, and it will take a lot of my, the rest of my career, whatever remains of it, probably about 30 years or so, whatever, I don't know. It also felt like something, it's a meaningful enough cause that I could give myself to it at this stage of my life.
Right, right. And especially, you know, when you read all the great success stories of entrepreneurs and leaders, they always talk about having such a goal that it can take a lifetime to achieve. Now, I definitely enjoyed, and I encourage everybody to go to your website, which is the 1M, it's 1mbyonem.com.
That's right.
Correct. And I enjoyed your videos on there. And the let's talk about this, the second part of the 1 million, the revenues. You brought up a great point, and I'd heard this before. The hardest goal or the hardest million to reach is that first million in revenues. Why do you think that is so?
You know, for a variety of reasons, getting to 1 million in revenue is hard because you're starting from scratch and you don't have any credibility in the market. You don't have any customers. You don't have any reference customers. So you have to convince the first few customers to buy your product. Once a few customers buy your product and you create success stories, you can use those success stories to convince other people. But it's kind of like who's going to bell the cat, right? First, convincing the first few customers to buy your product or your service is incredibly complicated. And that's a stage where a lot of what I call infant entrepreneur mortality happens. And there's also, you know, in first-time entrepreneurs in particular, there's a tremendous amount of ignorance.
Right.
And that ignorance drives them to do all sorts of stupid things. One of them is people chase financing out of the gate without doing any validation work, without doing homework that needs to be done. They go chasing money. They go chasing financing. And investors,
right,
however, do not fund these concepts, basically. Investors are looking for validated businesses to fund where they can assess the risks properly and cleanly and get some evidence that this is a company as opposed to just a concept. And there is a huge gap, it seems, in people's understanding of what should be done at that very early stage. What are the priorities? What are the first few things one should be doing? And people have this misconception that they should go chasing investors. So they go chase investors, 6 months, 9 months go by, they don't get funded, and then they run out of steam and they go out of business.
Right, and then bring on the family, bring on all of the naysayers who discourage them, and you shouldn't have done this, or you knew, and then it's over, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up because I did want to talk about your article. It's a very interesting article on the Harvard Business Review that you wrote, the primary cause of Entrepreneur Infant Mortality. I like the title of that. One, you did just mention the business, the businesses that go after financing. That's one of the first things we do often. And you said 99% of businesses are rejected. What are some of the other causes of the fatality or mortality of infant
entrepreneurship? Let me actually explain to you what's going on. And you bring up the Harvard Business Review article, How to Reduce Infant Entrepreneur Mortality, and where I said that 99%, over 99% of entrepreneurs who go out to raise financing get rejected.
Mm-hmm.
That's something very important for people to understand. Why do people get rejected? There's
mm-hmm.
two primary reasons. One is entrepreneurs go out to raise money too soon without doing enough validation, without doing their homework, which I talked about earlier. There's a
right.
second reason. The second reason is most businesses are not fundable by venture capital. Venture capital is a model that is applicable to extremely large business opportunities, and I'm talking billion-dollar ideas.
Right, like Silicon Valley type of ideas.
Yeah, and,
like
and most
right.
businesses are not billion-dollar business ideas. Most businesses are, you know, 20 million, 30 million, maybe $5 million business ideas, and no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to get venture financing on a $20 million, $30 million idea. Definitely
wow.
not on a dollar idea. So that's something that people need to understand, and there are what this is something we teach in our program is to how to really understand what is the business opportunity in front of you, how to quantify it, how to model it, how to decide on whether your business is fundable or not. And if it's not fundable, that doesn't mean it's a bad business. You can still
mm-hmm.
build that business. It just has to be done built differently. And by the way, people also equate fundability with venture capital. There are other kinds of fund financing also, you know. Once you have some amount of track record, you can get bank financing, you can get inventory financing, you can get receivable financing. There are many different ways of financing a business,
mm-hmm.
you know, and grow to its potential other than venture capital. But for some reason, because of the amount of media attention venture capital gets, that's become the, you know, people, all entrepreneurs think that they have to get venture capital, and that's a huge, huge misconception.
Right. Well, you know, we see it, like you said, in the media. We see it on the hot show that every business person loves. We see the Shark Tank. We see, like you mentioned, in a lot of the print media as well. And it is, especially now with technology, the way that things happen with the Silicon Valley and all of now the apps is the latest thing that's out here. That, you know, it's a lot of push towards that. And I know in your article you mentioned that whole myth of entrepreneurship equaling venture capital. Talk a little bit about that myth a little bit more, and then share your formula with us that you say entrepreneurship equals customers plus revenue.
Right. So, you know, my definition or my guidance on what people need to do first and foremost when
mm-hmm.
they want to start a company is to really immerse themselves in customers.
Okay.
And by that I mean also prospects, potential customers. And really
okay.
understand their needs, understand their, you know, what will prompt them to buy, whether they will buy what you're planning to offer or not. All this is far more critical. We call this generally overall the entire methodology that we teach, customer validation methodology. And that is far more important in the early stages than any interaction with investors.
Mm-hmm.
So we are today operating under the misconception that entrepreneurship equals financing. The reality is entrepreneurship equals customers, revenues, and profits.
Mm-hmm.
You have to build a profitable, sustainable company that is based on products or services you sell to customers that generate revenue, and you have to be able to be profitable. Eventually, a business is something that can make money, and making money means making profits. This is a business. This is what entrepreneurship is supposed to be all about. Financing is supposed to be optional. Financing should be optional. But I think the problem with the industry right now is that people think financing is their goal and not revenues or customers' revenues or profits.
And another interesting point you brought up, now since we know we've seen a lot of things happen with the economy, you talked about capitalism's fundamental flaws, and you stated that there were two particular problems. First, you said it's been hijacked by spectators. What do you mean by that?
Not spectators, speculators.
I mean speculators, excuse me, speculators.
So, if you look at what's happening today, it's, you know, it's basically capitalism today is a fortune at the tip of the pyramid system. It's a very a huge concentration of wealth at the very tip of the pyramid. I actually personally do not have any problems, philosophically, I don't have any problems with inequality, because capitalism is inherently supposed to be unequal. It's supposed to be a meritocracy. It's supposed to be, you know, people who take risks, create value, and, you know, create jobs, create enterprises, get rewarded much more than people who don't take those risks, or, you know, do not create those jobs and so forth. But right now, part of the problem we have is that the people who are making the maximum amounts of easy money are people who are basically trading in the finance industry, and they're not really creating any value. So there's been a decoupling between value creation and wealth creation. So people, the speculators are creating wealth but not value. And that, I think, is a major flaw of capitalism.
And how could they create? And what do you mean? Can you go into more details about they're creating wealth but they're not creating value? Do you mean jobs or what?
Moving money from here to there, right? If you if you're pure, the only thing that you do is speculate. You're, you know, buying and selling stocks day and night. You're or bonds or whatever assets. You're not really creating value. Contrast that with, there are parts of the finance industry that does create value. For example, I would say the venture capital industry actually does create value, because the venture capital industry is focused on building businesses. And there are parts of the venture capital industry that is also highly speculative. But by and large, the philosophy of venture capital is that you also have to invest money in young companies who are, you know, innovating and creating and building enterprises. And for the most part, venture capitalists make money when successful companies get built. And that, in my opinion, is value creation. And that also has the byproduct of creating jobs, which is important for society. But if you're just trading stocks and bonds and just moving money from here to there, that is not a value creation exercise necessarily.
I see.
I'm not saying that markets are not important. I think what that does is basically keeps the market alive.
Right.
And that it is, markets need to be, mercantile capitalism works only when markets work. But I think today it has become too skewed. The whole system is much more skewed towards value creation, towards speculation as opposed to value creation.
Value creation, right. Definitely needs to be some type of balance.
And they're taking undue risks and destroying economies, right? The whole financial crisis came out of the speculators taking undue risks. And then the worst part of it is that the government bailed them out. So it's privatized gains and socialized losses, which is absolutely not permissible in capitalism, in capitalism the way it was envisioned.
So what are some of the solutions that you say? I know you mentioned some of them.
I can't say that I have all the solutions, but one solution that I am personally working on is combining the values, the philosophies of democracy and capitalism, and trying to create a framework that can teach a much larger number of entrepreneurs around the world to be successful, to build successful businesses, and what I call create fortune in the middle of the pyramid. Right now we have a system that is fortune at the tip of the pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see that the benefits of capitalism being harnessed and enjoyed by a much larger population of people. And that's the philosophical premise of 1 million by 1 million. I see 1M1M as a framework for distributed democratic capitalism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I know with the 1 million, 1 million, you have, it's all virtual, which is just, I mean, that is just a brilliant idea to have it virtual so that you can reach so many people around the world. And I want to encourage everyone, again, to go to 1mbyonem.com, and you can see Shramana's videos on there. You talk about your round table that you have, which is first of all, unlike other incubators out there. Let me back up. Why is yours so unique as an incubator? And
one of the main philosophies of our incubator is that we are completely inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Most incubators are looking for that less than 1% fundable mm-hmm. companies, because their model is they take equity in companies
mm-hmm.
and then they help. The promise is to raise money from angels followed by VCs and help these companies become successful. So their criteria for success is funding.
Mm-hmm.
And this is flawed because, as I said, most businesses are not fundable. And
mm-hmm.
there are, you know, over 8,000 incubators out there in the world today. If all of them go and promise entrepreneurs that they're going to help them raise financing, it's just not a viable model, you know, because, and a lot of people are failing as a result.
Mm-hmm.
So both the incubators are failing and the entrepreneurs are failing.
Mm-hmm.
Our philosophy is that we don't promise that we're going to raise funding for entrepreneurs, because we acknowledge that there are lots of unfundable entrepreneurs out there, but unfundable doesn't mean that those entrepreneurs cannot be success, cannot achieve success if success is achieved as customers, revenues, and profits.
You know, I got to stop you right there, because that statement is such a powerful statement. I speak with entrepreneurs every day, and that whole idea of us getting the business plan, getting this so that we can get the funding, that really legitimizes your business. Like you said, that myth is perpetuated throughout.
It is very deep-seated. That
yeah.
myth is extremely deep-seated, and that's something that we do not believe in.
Right.
So we don't promise that you'll get funded, because we acknowledge that this is a myth. We acknowledge
right.
that you could be in a business that is not fundable, in which case, that's fine. We'll teach you how to build that business within the parameters of the dynamics of your business, the characteristics of your business, and what is right for your business.
So right, right.
You are the only incubator in the world that is willing to work with you and help you build your business even if you're not fundable. So that makes us inclusive. We can work with millions of businesses just because of that, because there aren't millions of fundable businesses. It just does not exist.
I mean, just that last statement, that just because you're not fundable doesn't mean that you can't have a good business.
That's right. And you know,
yeah.
one thing that has become a phenomenon in the last few years, because of the internet, because of social media, and because of the amount of power that is in the hands of entrepreneurs today, it has become very cheap
mm-hmm.
to start businesses. It has
mm-hmm.
become a lot cheaper to build
mm-hmm.
businesses. And as a result, you know, a lot of young people are starting businesses and building businesses very early. As you see, people are very you know, interested in starting businesses very early in their careers, you know, in their 20s,
mm-hmm.
you know, before people used to work for many, many years and then maybe start a business in their 40s. Nowadays, people are starting business early with requiring very little to get going. And my thesis is that we want to empower these people to be successful with the right education, the right incubation support, so that they can be successful business owners. And as long as they can build profitable businesses at whatever scale, even if they build a $1 million a year business, even if they build a $5 million a year business, as long as it's a profitable business, we believe that that is success. Then you decide how what level you want to go to. You've already built a $5 million business. Now you want to go to $20 million. Let's figure out the strategy of how to do that. If you want to go to $100 million, let's figure out the strategy to do that. And maybe then, if you do have the characteristics of that kind of scale in your business, maybe now is the time to go raise money. Let's figure out what is the financing strategy. And so on and so forth. So we believe that everybody should be empowered to succeed at the level of their potential.
Mm-hmm.
But success is not only building a billion-dollar business. Success is not only building a venture-fundable business. A mom who's raising three children and wants to build a business on the side from home, if that mom builds a business that is going to bring in $100,000 a year, I think that is a huge success.
Oh, yes, for sure. For sure. Yes, it is. And she still has the flexibility of being and controlling her destiny and contributing to the budget as well. That's a huge success.
Yes, and also the sense of self that brings, right? I think the part of the problem that a lot of stay-at-home moms are facing is that they feel like they're losing their sense of self. Some of them are many very, very educated people, and they, by choosing to raise children and staying at home, they often lose that sense of self. My message to them is start a business, build a business, and do it at your own pace.
And
rebuild that sense of self.
Yes, yes, for sure, because it's something that you create, you know, from dust, and to be able to see it blossom is definitely a great accomplishment. It does something for your psyche to be able to do that as well. Because, I mean, when you speak to entrepreneurs, it's not always just about the money. It's about being able to build something that you can say you were able to build and have success, whatever that level of
success is. Entrepreneurship is a very stressful process, but it's also a creative process. It is almost like raising a child, and it is, you know, it has a lot of those characteristics, and it does reinforce a tremendous sense of self.
So if
you are doing that from home and building a business and catering to real customers and fulfilling real needs and bringing in customers, bringing in revenues, bringing in profits, and it will make you feel really a real sense of accomplishment, because it is hard to do.
It is. And I'm glad you brought that up, too, because a lot of times people see, especially today with the technology, and you can see the Facebook and Twitter and what have you, and people have the impression that being an entrepreneur sometimes, if they haven't, they think it's really easy. During those times, have you had any times in your journey that you maybe thought, maybe I should just go work for someone, or you thought about, this is very difficult? And if so, what are some of the things you did to continue on to where you are today?
Well, look, entrepreneurship is not easy at all. Anybody listening, if you have this misconception that entrepreneurship is easy, just get off that misconception, because it isn't. It's extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a roller coaster ride. It's full of huge highs, but it's also full of huge lows.
Yeah.
And, you know, lots of things go wrong. Lots of things that you're hoping would happen or expecting would happen don't happen, or don't happen in the time frame that you're trying to make it happen. You have to, you know, make payroll every month or every week, whatever is your schedule, and you have to balance a lot of balls, juggle a lot of balls, and it's a very, very difficult path. So most people do go through phases where they think that this may not be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are entrepreneurs who really stick it out and have the resilience and have the tenacity to make it all come together, and when it does come together, it's incredibly satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
That's the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay if you, let's say you kind of dive into entrepreneurship and you go through the process and you decide that, well, no, I can't deal with it. And you decide to go another route, that's fine too. You know, it is not for everybody. I will be the first one to tell you that this is not for everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. That's for sure. It is definitely not for everyone. Well, I know with the 1 million by 1 million project, you have the online mentoring roundtables. What is that all about?
So for about four, this is our fifth year, actually, we've been doing this predates the 1M1M program itself.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing online mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific time, we have a free online mentoring session. And entrepreneurs from all over the world dial into this call and, you know, pitch their businesses and get feedback on their businesses. And it essentially runs like a reality show. You know, we take somewhere between 3 to 7 entrepreneurs in interactive mode, and then we have the rest of the room in listening mode and participating through public chat and so forth. So we've had over 16,000 entrepreneurs participate in these sessions. We've had companies from all over the world come to these sessions. Every week it's like a United Nations summit. You will meet all sorts of people from all over the world in these meetings. And I welcome all of you to come and check it out. If you go to our website, 1mby1m.com, you will see a tab for free public roundtables. That's where you will find the schedule and the registration links and everything. And you're very welcome to come join us. This is, by the way, what led us to the 1 million by 1 million virtual incubator program. Because we have talked to so many people, this is, you know, this week is our 181st roundtable. So
we've
done a lot of these sessions, and we have deep understanding of what issues early stage entrepreneurs face. And we, what we have done in the premium program, in the 1 million by 1 million premium program, which is our full incubation program,
mm-hmm.
we have a curriculum, a video lectures and case studies based curriculum where we have addressed all these issues, and we give you a very comprehensive, almost like an MBA in entrepreneurship through this curriculum. And also we have private mentoring sessions as part of the premium program as well. We charge $1,000 annual membership fee only for this entire program.
Yeah, well, we have entire program.
The program is just $1,000 annual membership fee.
Yes, because I know if you were looking at, like you said, at the others, you first of all, it's not all inclusive. They're very exclusive, and they want to take part of your equity of your company, and you're just charging $1,000 for this an annual basis.
You know, when we quantify the ROI of our program, we give you $375,000 a year worth of value for $1,000 annual membership fee.
Wow.
Tremendous, valuable program.
Wow. And the free online roundtable that they can really learn more about the program that you just mentioned, that's on Tuesdays again. Give them the time Thursdays. Say that again.
Thursday morning, 8 a.m. Pacific time.
Okay, perfect. Now, tell us about if someone wanted to actually get their business pitched. You mentioned you usually have about 7. How would someone do that?
If you go to the registration page, as I told you,
mm-hmm.
you just need to go to the website, register. You can register to pitch or register to attend. You can register to attend first, listen to a session, and then register to pitch at the next session. You know, we are very flexible, and that's how we organize the programs.
Wow, wow. I bet you get, like you said, people from all over the world. What are some of the other common challenges that you've seen entrepreneurs face in building their businesses today?
Well,
we've talked about.
You know, we have studied these challenges at length, and as a result, what we have done is we've created a curriculum which addresses
uh-huh.
the common challenges. So if you look at the, you know, the 7 primary modules, core modules of the curriculum. Those
okay.
are bootstrapping, positioning, customer validation, customer acquisition, market sizing, team building, and financing.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much the challenges that we face on all the time, or entrepreneurs face all the time, are categorized in those seven categories, and we have video lectures and case studies on each of those topics and discussion areas where you can ask questions and, you know, discuss your specific situations. And then we also have elective modules, which are industry-specific, where, you know, we work in the technology and technology-enabled services industries primarily. So we have elective modules in subsectors of those industries. E-commerce, for instance, is a very big category. Web businesses, Web 3.0 and e-commerce is a major elective category for us.
Mm-hmm,
cloud
mm-hmm.
computing and business solutions. You hear a lot about cloud businesses these days, and this is a very big category for us. Mobile and social apps, gaming, healthcare IT, online education / educational technology, outsourcing and consulting. All these are elective modules in the curriculum where we talk about specific business areas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are there some areas that you think entrepreneurs need to focus more on as far as business or trends? I know you mentioned several that are hot right now. Where are there any trends that you think for those new entrepreneurs that are listening that want to be an entrepreneur and want to find?
I'm very bullish on niche e-commerce.
Okay.
I think e-commerce is very big and it's going to continue to be very big, and it's going to be a very global phenomenon. It's already a very global phenomenon, and that global nature of e-commerce is going to continue to increase.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I think niche e-commerce is a very interesting category. Like, for example, you know, we have companies in our program or in our case studies that are working on very specific niches.
Mm-hmm.
There's a case study that we teach, which is a woman in Florida, and her company is called CableOrganizer.com.
Okay.
This company is doing $16 million a year selling cable organizer equipment online. So this is basically you have a rat's nest of cables under your desk and you want to cover them up, and it's basically concealers
wow.
stuff that organize those cables. And she
wow.
started from home, and, you know, a little while later her husband joined the company, and now they have, I think, something like 50 people. They have a warehouse and everything, and they're basically doing a $16 million a year business just selling cable organizers
from home. Now, did she manufacture the cable organizers? Is she just
no,
happy?
No, doesn't.
Wow, she distributes them, sells them. Wow,
It's a retail business, retail e-commerce business.
Wow.
Go ahead. What I mean by niche e-commerce, this is a category that is very interesting. Another trend that is hot right now is everything around online education / educational technology is very hot. There's all sorts of things going on. We have a company in our program that develops an iPad application for
mm-hmm.
autistic children, for helping them communicate. And the app sells for $99. And the company is, again, you know, selling a very, very impressive product. And it's a, you know, high-value product. It's a small company, but it's a very important product because it's a niche product. It caters to a specific niche of customers, but it solves a real problem.
Right, right. So it doesn't, you know, what you're saying and what I'm hearing you say to entrepreneurs is not necessarily something that you have to invent. Like you see today, a lot of inventions with apps or what have you, you just need to be able to find a good product, a niche product, you're saying, that can be sold via the e-commerce.
Or, I mean, the iPad application I told you about is a product that's the company has built.
That they developed,
yeah.
right, of course.
Yes,
but
yep.
I was thinking of also of the cable organizer, something as simple as that. I mean, I just, I guess my mind was on that so much because with all of the technology that's out here, a lot of times people feel like they have to create something or invent something to be able
don't
to
have invent
do
things
well.
All the time. Invent. See, entrepreneurship and innovation are not synonymous terms.
Mm-hmm.
You can be an entrepreneur without inventing anything. Cable organizer is a very good example of that, is that it's somebody who's built a business selling something that they haven't built, they haven't developed or manufactured or sold, or invented. They are selling the product.
Right. Now, tell us, this time is going by so fast. If you just joined us, we're celebrating our fourth-year anniversary today with our very special guest, Sramana Mitra, who is with the founder of the 1 Million by 1 Million Project. What would you like to share with women entrepreneurs today? Do you have a special message you like to leave with them?
Well, I think I have a couple of messages. One is, you know, the rules are not different for you because you're a woman entrepreneur.
Mm.
You have to be a great entrepreneur. And the definition of a great entrepreneur is somebody who can build a business, get customers, get revenues, get profits. And that is something that you're going to have to do, whether you're a woman entrepreneur or a male entrepreneur. So don't think of yourself as a woman entrepreneur. You have to be a damn compelling entrepreneur, period. That's number one. The second message is you decide what is your definition of success. Do not let other people define the define success for you. You know, what is success for you? If you decide that you want to build a venture-funded billion-dollar company and that is what you define as success, that's fine. Pursue that. If you decide, however, that you want to have three children and you want to build a business that can give you flexibility and, you know, you preserve your sense of self and your, you know, deploy your intellectual capacity and your potential and your, you know, ambitions and everything, and but you want to do all of those things, then define your success that permits you to do that. Balance becomes then part of your success equation. Maybe you want to work from home. Maybe you want to build a company that is, you know, more adjusted to your lifestyle. And that's fine, too. That is also success. Don't let external forces define success for you, and don't calibrate yourself or measure yourself against somebody else's definition of success.
That is so important, that last statement you said. It's because as women, we have that mindset sometimes that because we are women, it's going to be different. But I learned when you are competing against a male or you are working alongside a male, they're thinking about business. They're not thinking about, oh, you're a woman, let me take it easy or anything like that. It is you have to be an entrepreneur, just like you said. And then the fact that we should define on what that success is and not allowing someone else or others determine what that success should be, because we fall into a lot of those guilt traps when it comes to our children. If we want to build a business around children, maybe we don't want to do what someone else is doing. And I like that ending there, like you said, comparing ourselves to others, measuring ourselves to others. Those are some great, great points that you have made.
And whichever way you decide to go, if you need help, come work with us. We don't care whether you're building a billion-dollar business or you're building a $1 million business. Whichever direction you want to go, we will work with you to fulfill your goals. You don't need to fulfill our goals. Our goal is to make you successful. And to the extent that you help us fulfill our goals, it's by us making you successful. But that success is defined by you. You define what scale and what are the parameters of your success are.
Mm-hmm. We determine our own goals, and once we reach those goals, that's a success. Therefore,
yes, and
1 million by 1 million.
Your goals, whatever you define
right.
as your goals, we will help you reach your goals. We work
right.
with a lot of companies that are working towards the traditional venture funding model, and we have companies that have got funded and so forth. But we also work with a lot of entrepreneurs who are working on, you know, self-finance businesses with smaller niche opportunities, and that's also fine.
Wow. Well, I tell you, if you just joined us and you missed this show, you want to go back and download it immediately. You know you can find us on iTunes. Go ahead and download it on your smartphone. Shramana Mitra of 1 Million by 1 Million has shared some powerful information. She has a great article you need to check out on the Harvard Business Review as well. Shramana, I tell you, thank you so much. Before we let you go, please give all of your contact information so that our listeners can reach out to you after the show.
The best way to reach me would be through the 1M1M site, which is 1M by 1M.com. So the number 1M by number 1M.com. And you
Fantastic.
Would find all the registration information for the roundtables as well as, you know, on the support tab, you would find information on how to contact us. If you need to talk to somebody, we will connect you with somebody. But start with the web page. That's where you will find everything.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations to you for all of your success. And really, we want to thank you for everything that you're doing. You don't have to do this. You don't have to take this time to build and
yes,
to work with
do.
Other
it
entrepreneurs.
Is a business. I do have to do this. I have chosen to do this as a business. And today,
yes.
I have customers. I have to cater to those customers, and I have to cater to my team, and I have to build this business. So,
yes,
so
I'm it's a mission
because I
that
want
you're
to
on.
Be here. And I'm doing this because I want to do this.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, definitely. Well, your mindset is definitely in the place. We know with your success you could be doing some other things, but, of course, you are definitely on the mission to do what you're doing, and we appreciate you, Shramana, for that.
Thank you for having me.
Definitely. Continued success, and we look forward to perhaps having you on the show in the future.
All right, and good luck with all your efforts as well.
Thank you. We'll stay in touch.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye now. And thank you to everyone that has tuned in and helped us celebrate our fourth-year anniversary here with Wealthy Sisters Radio Show. We thank you again. We could not have done it without you. We appreciate all of the listeners from all over, all of your feedback and the great emails we get every week. And we just want to remind you, we'll be here again next week as we continue to celebrate the anniversary month here on Wealthy Sisters Radio. So until then, you know what we do. We wish you and yours the best of everything great. See you next week.
This has been another episode of Wealthy Sisters Radio. Thank you for joining us. Stay tuned for another positively impacting show next week. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Wealthy Sisters and on the web at WealthySistersRadio.com. The opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of our hosts, staff, or partners of our Wealthy Sisters.